part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
Right now, our cats. Well, okay, we have a kitten.
Uh-huh.
He has the zoomies like crazy. And occasionally he's getting into spats with the older cat.
Okay.
I think that they're calming down now, but a minute ago there was a lot of yowling. So I'm just going to, you know, give it a few minutes and see what happens.
Don't even worry. We've had dogs, babies, you know, okay. Cats interrupt. It's like totally fine. You don't have
okay.
to. It's part-time fanboy. It's not like, you know, Showtime at the Apollo. We're you know, we're a very loosey-goosey operation here.
To be fair, I think that the cat fights would probably do pretty well at the Apollo. They're very entertaining.
You're probably right.
It's like there's a lot of like one cat hanging out of like the top nest on a cat tree and like swatting the other one. It's quite acrobatic. Really.
Oh my goodness. That's hysterical. I'm severely allergic, so I can't have cats. So.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm not sorry. I'm fine. I'm not a cat. I'm more of a dog person than a cat person.
Oh, okay.
So. Yeah. Yeah. But I
used to be much more of a cat person. But then we moved to Missoula, Montana, which is very much a dog town.
Oh really?
And now I can like recognize people through their dogs only.
Oh, nice. That's great.
Yeah. That's hello. Great.
Hello.
I'm Jail. How are you?
I know who you are. You've been on the podcast before. Welcome back.
Well, you know, sometimes a random voice popping in could be like,
Lindsay warned me. Lindsay warned me. We're good. Everyone's good. So first of all, I would like to say, I think congratulations are in order, not just because you're doing a Kickstarter, but you got married since the last time. Right?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yes,
you
did.
Oh wow.
To each other, right?
Like, yeah, to each other.
Congratulations.
We've had quite the year. It's been
It's been quite a banner year for us.
Awesome.
We've been technically engaged to be married for like 8 years.
Yeah. I know how it goes.
We just finally got our act together enough to do the things.
Nice. Congratulations. Congratulations. I should say who you are, you know, as we get started now that JL has dropped on the line, and I'll start with his name since he just popped out of nowhere. JL Draco and Lindsay G. Is it the Lindsay G still, or are we Lindsay Draco now? Like, how is this like, or am I, is it too personal to say?
Oh,
like?
No, I'm still Lindsay G.
Nice. Lindsay G, JL Draco. Oneshi
I'm
Press,
actually
JL correct?
G now. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, I did not hear that. What'd you say?
I said, I'm actually JLG now, but no.
Gotcha. Oh, I'm so sexist. Christian, stop it. You're so terrible. So the patriarchy is alive and well on part-time family.
Yeah, I'm
so sorry. But yes, and you run Oneshi Press, correct?
Yes.
Got the name right? Yes.
Absolutely.
I listened to our previous podcast to try and remember and get the pronunciation correct. And you currently have a Kickstarter going on, correct?
We do indeed. It is a Kickstarter for the Cohorts Anthology, which is our 13th anthology of short comics. It features 18 short comics created by 30 creators from all over the world.
Wow. So wait, how many anthologies have you done? I was not aware that you had done like so many anthologies. How many is it now?
This is our 13th, and that's if you don't include our series, Mr. Guy, which is also
kind of
an anthology series, sort of.
Oh, yeah. Wow. And is that 13 Kickstarters in total? Like,
actually,
this is our 18th Kickstarter. And actually, most of the anthologies we have not Kickstarted. We paid for them out of pocket.
Oh.
Our last three anthologies we Kickstarted.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I mean, the last time I had you on, it was Tracy Queen, which was on Kickstarter.
And, right.
Yeah, and that seems to be very different in sort of like, I don't subject matter than what's going on with Cohorts, correct?
Very different.
Yeah.
And Yeah, it's a completely different audience. We love it when there's crossover, when people are like, hey, you know what? I really like Tracy Queen. That was great. And that was fun. That's what I read, you know, after dark when the kids are asleep or whatever, you know. Yeah. But I also love the anthology because there's so many different styles of art and types of stories. And, you know, like, I love it when there's crossover. But I also understand there are some folks that are like, yeah, let me know next time you're doing a Tracy Queen Kickstarter. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And there's some folks that are like, okay, please stop letting me know about Tracy Queen. I love everything else you do. You know,
that's so
like,
funny. Eh. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I mean, that's great. I mean, let's talk about what Cohorts is then, because I only really kind of remember Tracy Queen. And I know we all know that that's not safe for work, more grown up and stuff like this. This seems to be sort of like a very different sort of like, lens that we're kind of looking at the world through, should I say. Yeah. Like, this is, I mean, what if it's an anthology, I'm assuming it, you can explain it yourself, that it's based on a theme or like something that connects them all, or what is the sort of like glue that holds this anthology together?
So the through line for this anthology is basically team ups.
Oh, nice.
So we for a while, we had this idea, we wanted it to be about, you know, people working together for a common goal. And we were trying to come up with like the right terminology. And cohorts is what we kept coming back to because it can mean such a wide variety of types of team ups. You know, you can be cohorts with your best friend that you're trying to achieve a goal with, but you can also be cohorts with, you know, a mortal enemy if you're both trying to achieve the same goal. And we wanted to have that sort of leeway so that creators could put together a team up of whoever they wanted to get to the end of their story. And we really did end up with this great smattering of like kind of every team up imaginable. We've got like, you know, giant mechs being powered by multiple different people. We do have actual mortal enemies who have to team up together to escape from their even more mortal enemy. They're more mortal enemy.
They're even mortaler enemy. Or enemy.
Mortalest.
The mortalest.
Yeah.
And then we've got, you know, like friends of convenience, and we've got, you know, people who just are sort of thrown together and have to, you know, escape something or work together. So, you know, we've got these 18 short comics, and I think they're pretty much all coming up with a different version of what a cohort is. And as far as like how it differs from Tracy Queen, I just want to say like the wholesomeness factor of our anthology series is amped way up from Tracy.
Oh yeah, this is decidedly safe for work. You might get an F-bomb.
Yeah.
That might be like, you know.
Gotcha.
Actually though, there is a little crossover between Pack and Tracy Queen, our two series, in a short that's in this anthology. But Tracy Queen herself is not in it. But one of her cohorts is. Two of her cohorts are in it.
Nice.
And that's a fun, cute little like crossover moment where some characters from the pack meet some characters from Tracy Queen. Both of those comics take place in the same world. So they're, you know, imminently ripe for crossovers and, you know, side characters on side quests and whatever else.
Nice.
Yeah, so the anthology series started just very shortly after we started publishing.
That was in 2017,
It was either 2017 or 2018 when we started doing anthologies. And they actually started out very small because we were working on Pack and Tracy Queen, but we weren't ready to release anything. Like, we didn't have full issues of either series ready yet.
Yeah.
But we wanted to start getting them out there. So we put the first 8 pages of each into our first anthology and then basically recruited other people that we knew who were making comics.
It was Miguel Colon and Tom Swiftberg.
Yeah.
They both had 8 pagers, and we were like, hey, cool, let's, you know.
Yeah, so
let's throw our 8 pagers together.
So our first anthology had only 4 short comics in it. It was a little floppy, you know.
And then a bunch of art pages.
And a bunch of art and ads. Cool stuff. You know,
it was kind of like more like a zine almost.
Yeah. Except the
zines are good. Zines are good. Nice.
And we started doing those. We were so crazy. We started doing 4 of those a year.
Oh, so wow.
We were doing quarterly anthologies. And then, you know, naturally, as we started putting them out, we started getting more people submitting their work and they started getting bigger. And after, I don't know, it was like 2.5 years, we were like, we can't keep doing these quarterly. This is insane. Yeah. So then we started doing what we do now, which is publishing 1 anthology a year that has way, way more content in it. Gotcha. And we're up to about 140 pages is our average currently. And obviously this one has 18 short comics. So they have beefed up enormously since we began. And now we're just doing the 1 a year so we can really focus on it and actually do some other things in the meantime.
Oh, very and cool.
Mind you, I mean, we get, Lindsay, how many submissions would you say we've been averaging-ish per anthology?
Don't know. That's a good question. It's at least 60 for this.
Yeah, I want to say it's around 60 or 70. So we get about 70, and we've whittled it down to 18, and that's if you include our materials that we've included in there. So we're really, you know, we're taking the pick of the litter and, you know, promoting the stories that fit our brand and our ideals the closest, that we think have, you know, the most unique bents on storytelling and the most unique art styles, and putting them together. You know, I find personally, if I were to go to like, you know, Super Buffet or whatever, if there was like a dozen different platters that all had more or less the same thing in them, I'd be like, let's never go back to that Super Buffet. That sucked. You know, I'm the kind of person that I go in and I take my plate and I put like a spoonful of each option possible on there. And I walk away back to the table with a towering plate, trying not to spill it, because I want to taste everything. You know, I want like one bite of everything, please. So for me, a good buffet should have like a lot of variety and very different types of dishes. And, you know, it should be exciting, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we try to do, is like, how many different takes can we get on our theme?
Yeah.
And how unique can each one be from the other? So when you have like 18 comics and they're all wildly different, but all still centered on the same theme and still fit the same brand and, you know, the same like sensibilities, I think that that's a really exciting collection. So that's what we've tried to do.
That's cool. No, I mean, sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. We're getting cat attacked.
Yeah. Oh, no. Understanding. Cats are lethal. That's why I don't have
lethal kittens.
No, I was going to ask, because one of the things that I had somebody who was doing an anthology several weeks ago, a different anthology. And one of the things that I always ask people who are publishing or creating anthologies, you know, because when I was younger, I was not a fan of anthologies, because like I knew what I wanted. Like I knew I wanted this artist. I knew I wanted this writer. And when I got anthologies, it would be like, oh, maybe, you know, I would like certain stories and other stories. And I'm like, oh, I just paid my $1.50 or whatever for my comic. And, you know, I don't like this and I like this. Talk to me about, for you, and I think you addressed it a little bit, JL, but, you know, the appeal of the anthology to you, as opposed to sort of like one sort of direct narrative. I mean, you did that with Tracy Queen, but what is the thing that you think that either you both really love about anthologies or that people enjoy about anthologies in general?
Well, so Lindsay has been, you've been in a bunch of prose anthologies and collections, right? And I, you know, I've never had my work in an anthology until we started doing our own, but I grew up reading Heavy Metal Magazine.
Gotcha.
And as a kid, I had a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles anthology called Turtle Soup. And every few pages was a different team, different writers, different artists. So it was all these different takes on the Turtles, including Stan Sakai, which I freaking love, that, you know, the Turtles end up in Yosagi Ojimbo land and
yeah,
do that whole thing. And so I grew up with that as one of my little treasures. And to me, it was so weird. It was like, why did the Turtles look different on every few pages?
Yeah.
Like, what is this magic? Like, how are different people making different Turtles that are the same Turtles?
It's yeah.
just, what is this? You know, so I studied it and I studied it.
Down.
So, you know, and like for me, it was just magical. And, you know, as I got older, I started to look at things more deeply and read the intro text and stuff like that. And there was a really beautiful intro by, think it was it Kevin Eastman maybe yeah, about how, you know, their vision of the future was that comics would be done this way and that there would be more camaraderie amongst artists and appreciation for different styles, and you know that like they pictured a future in which their Turtles would be shown in many different styles. Yeah. And that is the case. I mean, if yeah. you look at the sure. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, every single show that comes out is a completely different style. Every
yeah.
comic series is a completely different style, and they've embraced it and they love it, you know, and I love it. I want to see as many different freaking Turtles as I can, you mm-hmm. know? And so I realized like the anthology thing is a barrier to entry for a lot of people who haven't had the benefit of like being exposed to that as a kid. I mean, heavy metal is not something most parents would give to their kids.
No, no, you know, not.
I had a different dad and I had a lot of heavy metal. I had almost like every issue of heavy metal.
Wow.
Like,
oh, wow.
He would get them at garage sales. He would get them from customers who's like, hey, you know, maybe your kid will like this. And he'd be like, yeah, sure. So, you know, he kind of ended up like collecting them as a completionist on my behalf.
Sure.
And I loved it. You know, I studied them. And for me, it was so cool
yeah.
that like, it would be like Saturday morning cartoons,
yeah.
you know, like
gotcha.
Just a different cartoon every half an hour, you
yeah.
know, and
yeah.
you want to watch them all, right?
Yeah. Well, I loved heavy metal, but for different reasons, I think. And God bless the newsstand, I have to say, when I was growing up, it was the one thing you could, it was the one thing you could pick up and they didn't know what it was. And you were just like, yes.
Yep.
Anyway.
And I mean, that too.
yeah, but, yeah, know, no, but the art is
you
gorgeous.
Know, and this is decidedly does not have that appeal, our anthologies, because they are much more wholesome oriented.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
but
you know, sometimes there's a stray boob in there. Like
a stray boob.
Oh,
<geez.
laughs> Well, even Marvel Comics had. Yeah, I mean. Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think it's really interesting that anthologies, like especially for like indie comics on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Anthologies are pretty much a staple. You know, like
yeah.
they're around. Some of them do really well. There's definitely an audience for anthologies, but it is also like we've learned it's a bit of a harder sell. It's there's a specific audience that is really into anthologies.
Yeah.
And in that audience, you know, people are looking for different things. And I think it's really interesting because like, I mean, when I was growing up, I lived in the middle of nowhere. We didn't have any comic book shops for very far in any direction.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up reading comic books. I grew up reading the Sunday newspaper comic page.
Gotcha.
Which, I mean, is an anthology. Like, you get a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And now, you know what you're getting. Like, you knew what you were going to expect. And I basically lived for Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah.
And I did have every Calvin and Hobbes book that came out as they came out as collections.
Yeah.
So I grew up on that. But, you know, also, like, I'm thinking about, like, when I was a kid, Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
It's an anthology show, you know, Animaniacs. It's an anthology show. You
oh,
have
yeah.
a bunch of
yeah.
shorts that are telling different stories that involve different characters, and you don't know what's going to happen next, but you enjoy that short format.
Yeah.
I also, like, when I got a little older, I'm at heart, I think, more of a prose writer, more of a fiction writer. So I subscribed to several magazines that were collections of short stories, and you know, I always walk away with like one story that I liked better than the others in the magazine, but I read all of them. Yeah. And the same goes for, you know, that's literary magazines, collections of poetry, even like I said, we didn't have comic books, but I grew up reading a lot of magazines. My mom subscribed to a lot of magazines, and it's like you have a whole bunch of different stories in there about different things. Like, I feel like the anthology of the comics anthology is not in any way a new thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely not.
And it's a tried and true. It's like the vaudeville of the comics world.
Yeah.
And I personally really enjoy that format, especially because, you know, I'm busy. I run a publishing company. I also have a full-time job. And I know a lot of other people in the indie comics sphere have similar types of schedules. And it's nice to be able to sit down with something that isn't going to engage you for more than, you know, half an hour. Yeah. And then you can put it down and walk away. And the next time you pick it up, you can look at something different. I find that really compelling. I really enjoy that. Mm. So I don't know. I find it a little bit of a head scratcher that anthologies are a bit of a harder sell, because I'm kind of like, from where I'm sitting, I'm like, what's not to like? I don't get it.
Sure. No, I think for me as a kid, it was mostly, you know, scrimping to get the change to buy the comic books and just, you know, having to be sort of selective, where it was like, okay, I know I'm going to get like John Byrne's Alpha Flight. I know I'm going to get like John Byrne's Fantastic. I'm dating myself here, and hopefully Teen Titans with George Pratt, you know, like those were the things. And if you got an anthology, sometimes you were just like, oh, maybe not everything was great. But the thing that I'm discovering as I'm older is that, like both of you have said, like it's this great smorgasbord, and you're like, oh, yeah, this is fantastic. Like, look at all these crazy artists. And if I don't happen to like one or two, that's fine, because I actually got like a bunch of other great imaginative stuff in there. Correct?
Yeah, exactly. And it really is amazing. Like, our past few anthologies, we've had pretty general themes. Like this one is cohorts, and we specifically keep them general because we really just love seeing the depth and the breadth of people's imaginations and styles and skill sets. Like, what people come up with when you give them a loose theme is really just amazing. Yeah. Like, it is so much fun when we sit down with all of the submissions that we've gotten and go through them, because it's like, you know, it really drives home the fact that, like, people are better when they work together with more people, because I would never have come up with most of the stuff that is in these anthologies, and yet we have the privilege of being able to publish them. It's really fantastic.
Yeah. How do you come up with the themes? Like, what, you know, I mean, you talked a little bit about cohorts, but like in general, like your first anthology, like what did you think? Like, what was the thought process behind that? Because, you know, you have, like, we talked about the history of comics, you know, being anthologies like EC Comics, you know, all those horror and sci-fi and, you know, noir comic, crime comics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What did you, when you were getting into anthologies, you know, what is the process? Like, what is it, just like you have a discussion about what you want to explore? Like, what is the thinking behind what you're going to put in that anthology, or what the overreaching arc is going to be?
Well, so, like, for example, we were just talking about the theme for our next anthology, and, you know, I think it's very much just, like, kicking around a few ideas until we kind of come up with one that we both are like, yeah, that. So, you know, it's like words, trying to figure out what word would be cool, but also what feels like something that might compel a good story. And also what might compel, like, a good story in terms of the writers and, you know, like, writers who are submitting, like, what word do we give you as a theme that might trigger various types of creative output, you know? And then also that word needs to be something that an audience might feel compelled to be like, huh, what do you mean by that? You know, like, let me read more. Let me find out what this is about. I think we've got a pretty good one that we're working on for the next anthology, but we'll keep that under wraps for now, if you don't mind. Spoiler.
Sure, no, absolutely. No breaking news here, but that's okay.
Like, for me, cohort sounded like something that was like, well, what does that mean? I mean, you hear it in context, but I feel like most people would be like, I gotta look that up. Like, what do you really mean by that? And I think there's a little bit of a, like, intrigue to it, you know? It's a tantalizing word. I feel like it's, we want to go for tantalizing, you know?
Well, you want to get people, you know, sucked in and interested, correct? Especially, like, I would imagine, like, cohorts, like, to me, and I think team-ups, and I'm thinking, like, Marvel team-up or, like, superhero team-ups and stuff like that. What are some of the more interesting, I mean, without spoiling any of the stories, just scrolling through the Kickstarter page, like, what are some of the more interesting takes that you got, like, on that theme of, like, you know, because my very narrow mind comes up with, oh, Spider-Man teams up with Batman. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, but what sort of like crazy out of the box ideas were you getting?
There's some pretty good ones.
Yeah, we do. Sure. Like I said before, I think we've got two examples of mech team ups where you have multiple people driving a mech. And we do have one I won't call it a standard superhero team up because it's not standard, but we do have superheroes teaming up, you know, to battle the bad guy.
Sure.
But we also have a comic that JL wrote about two women who sign up to be nurses in World War II and end up being, you know, best roommates. Friends and models and wink, just roommates, wink, throughout their whole lives. We have one where there's an alien who has to team up with a dinosaur, and then I think eventually there's a platypus involved. We actually have two comics that involve kicking the crap out of the KKK.
Nice.
That came in from totally separate teams. I don't think they even knew about each other.
Nope.
and we were like, yes, we want these. Thank you. Watching Klansmen get their ass beat is kind of a favorite.
Always entertaining.
Pastime.
Good.
Yeah. But interestingly, one of them actually takes the cohorts theme and applies it to the Klansmen themselves. So you actually see a bunch of these people like within the organization who are all super suspicious of each other and all, you know, trying to like vie for power. And then in the other one, we actually have a Jewish superhero who was about to beat up and, you know, bring to justice a Nazi collaborator during World War II.
Oh, wow.
But then they're both captured by the Klan. So they have to team up so that they can escape the Klan. So actually have two mortal enemies who, like, literally must work together. And it's just amazing that we got both of these in one anthology and that they came at it from such different directions, but they're still working with the same theme. It's really phenomenal. And you get to like make fun of Nazis
of course.
And Klansmen. It's great.
It's the best thing to do in your spare time. Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. Well, one of the things that you are both going for too, it seems like going through your social media posts is like inclusivity or... you know, obviously not being the sort of like narrow definition of, you know, what comics are and stuff like that. Yeah. Can you talk to me about the challenges or the fulfillment that you're sort of like getting out of like opening up sort of like your, you know, submissions to being more, you know, I guess, open-minded or whatever the term that I'm searching for right now awkwardly is.
Well, I mean, one of the most important sort of tenets that Oneshi Press operates on is that collaboration is always better than competition. Mm. Both of us having grown up as creative people who, you know, would prefer to make our living entirely on our creative output. You know, we both got a lot of pushback about how, you know, that's not a real job. That's not a real thing, you know, and we've talked a lot about how that affected us and how we can see in the creative field, all creative fields, that we've been taught to compete against each other. You know, there's very much like a scarcity mindset that like there's only enough audience to go around. There's only enough money and attention and success. And a lot of the time what that ends up feeling like is that there's, you know, if somebody else in your field is doing really well, that means that you can't do really well. So you have to be competitive with everyone in order to get anywhere.
Yeah.
And one thing that we have witnessed from especially being a part of the Kickstarter indie comics world is that there's more than enough audience to go around. There's more than enough interest. Like when we work together, we get better results because we come up with more interesting stories. We come up, you know, the more perspectives that you put into play on any given thing, the better that thing ends up being. Mm-hmm. And we really believe that the creative fields can all benefit from adopting that. As opposed to tearing each other down, we can all lift each other up.
Sure.
And I think that is especially important when it comes to diversity and inclusivity and letting people speak for themselves and, you know, be heard on their own terms. And Jails.
Also, you know, I just wanted to add to that and say, you know, the more people we include in storytelling, the more angles on including people in our stories there are.
Yeah.
And that opens the door for more audience.
Mm-hmm.
More people that are like, I'm not into comics. Why aren't you into comics? Oh, they're just not about me. They're not for me, you know? And then it's like, actually, comics are for everyone. And people are like, oh, well, maybe I could check out comics. And all of a sudden, there's more people reading comics.
Right.
You're not divvying up your audiences. You're not losing audience. You're gaining audience.
Yeah.
Everyone's gaining audience. The more people that are included in it, the more people that are going to be its audience. The more powerful it is for everyone,
you
know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, why wouldn't you want more voices and more angles? And you know what I mean? Like, I just can't imagine that. But for example, like we have, you know, we've raised the ire of trolls in our campaign.
Surprise.
You know, like one dude left a comment on one of our ads the other day, which was just so silly. I had to share it. And man, when I shared it on Facebook, like I got a lot of, you know, comments and reactions and stirred up a lot of conversations. But this person was like, diverse. That should tell you right there how awful of a product this will be.
Oh, geez.
And I was just like, wait,
what?
So you like comics, but you don't want them to be diverse? Like, wait.
He likes gatekeeping. Is what?
Sure. Like, it just blew my mind. And I'm like, wow, what a small, pathetic thing to say. You know, like, that's so sad. Like,
I bet that person has nothing good to say about any of the new Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
Like, sorry, do you want your preferred form of entertainment to not move forward whatsoever? You want it to just become a relic of the past so nobody can ever change it? Like,
also, Marvel has literally always been super progressive.
Yeah, like, yeah. Of course.
Always.
Yeah. Well, I think superhero fiction has always been like, just people didn't notice it. Obviously, mostly white characters, but really, sure. Like, when I see the joke about like social justice warriors, I'm like, what? Like, Superman was throwing landlords out of windows, like in his first, like, what are you talking? Like, you know, like, yeah, they've always been progressive. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe with a rah-rah American sort of like conservative backbone to it a little bit, but they've never been like, you know, it's never been non-inclusive, right?
Yeah, it's never been safe. And I mean, X-Men, like, come on. It's right there.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that I admire about the both of you. And I think we talked a little bit about this during our first interview. Like, you know, you're doing a like not safe for work comic and you're doing this sort of thing, too. And there's challenges there to it, but I appreciate sort of like the courage that you have as well, because, you know, like you're doing the things that you kind of want to do. Can you speak to that a little bit? Like the fact that, A, you know, you're just not kind of like sticking yourself in sort of like one like round hole or a square peg or whatever, like just like, and you know, you're embracing like, oh, here's our adult book. Here's our, you know, maybe more general audiences book, like that sort of thing. Can you speak to me about the challenges? And quite honestly, yeah. I mean, I think it is sometimes courageous to do what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I have a sort of philosophical take on that I'll throw in, and then I think Jael wants to field this one.
Sure, no, sure.
But
go for it.
I realized that what I said before about the anthologies being a lot more wholesome than Tracy Queen,
yeah.
I actually don't entirely agree with my own statement.
Sure.
So granted, if anyone out there is unfamiliar, Tracy Queen is a not safe for work comic. It is about a woman who was raised to basically be a crime lord, who decides that she doesn't want to hurt people anymore, and so she goes into adult webcamming and becomes, you know, a porn star. And she decides that she really likes it because instead of giving people pain, she's giving people pleasure, and she feels more herself there. And now, granted, the bad guy in that book is like the opposite of wholesome. Like literally sometimes I'm reading through a script and I'm like, I can't believe that I wrote those words. Like, this is awful. This guy's terrible.
Uh-huh.
But the story itself has a really wholesome note to it, in that, like, you know, I personally believe that while we clearly don't want to, you know, expose people to sexual themes that they are not comfortable with, at the same time, there's nothing inherently unwholesome about sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge part of our lives. And I think that we would all be better off if we were more comfortable talking about it. I'm not going to get up on that soapbox right now. That is not the theme of this conversation.
Yeah.
But I do feel like there's a lot of room for wholesomeness and for like a good take-home message from most of what we do. And I think that Tracy Queen is very wholesome in that way. And I think that our anthologies are also really wholesome in that way. It's very much about expanding our ideas of what's okay to talk about. You know, what is safe on the pages of a comic to explore, you know, and what are you going to walk away from that experience with? And I think that that's really what most of our work is aiming to do, is to sort of push what people are willing to sit down and read about for a little while. And not in like a edgelord kind of way, but in a, like, I don't know, in a more wholesome way, I guess, is the way that I'm thinking of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in that sense, like, it's kind of the opposite of like the edgelord approach, which is like, oh, I'm just making art, I'm shocking people, I'm a disruptor. This is No, we're inviting people to think about things differently and to have new experiences and to take these journeys with our characters, to grow with them and to learn with them. And actually, in that sense, Lindsay's very right. Tracy Queen is super wholesome. I mean, granted, it's not safe for work.
Granted, you don't want to give it to your children.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
It's age appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, like, keep it age appropriate. Like, sure, it is not for kids, decidedly, right?
Yeah.
But it's very wholesome. It's not just like, you know, it's not just about, here's this character that I made to be exploited. It's the opposite. Tracy Queen is fighting exploitation, and her deciding to embrace her sexuality and make a career out of that is not exploitation. That is her consent, her taking the reins on herself and how she relates to others, and trying to teach people that the difference is about consent and agency.
Yeah.
is something that is completely not even part of like the general conversation about that.
Yeah.
Right now, the general conversation is like, are nipples allowed or are they yeah. illegal?
Are nipples you know? Good or bad?
Yeah. And like, it's like, well, it depends. Do those nipples want you to see them? That's the difference. You know?
So we're giving nipples agency is what we're saying.
Right. Nice. Set them free. Set them free. Decision. That's what I say. Set them free. No, I mean, and this is, I mean, but it's funny because this current anthology cohorts, it's interesting because the theme is working together. An anthology is about like people kind of like coming together and making something and, you know, different stories and stuff like that. And it's just interesting to me how you can balance back and forth between like different sort of like themes between anthologies and still like, you know, make your goals and stuff like that, especially in today's current Kickstarter market, which like right now, you know, you say there's room for everyone. And I do agree, but it seems like everyone and their sister is putting out a Kickstarter like right now, which I'm fine with because people come and talk to me about it. That's good. But like, can you speak to the challenges of, you know, doing different things in different books? Yeah. Like, is it challenging? Like if this one's cohorts, maybe, you know, and I'm just using an example that pops into my head, like maybe the next anthology is medieval, whatever characters, right? That's just off the top of my head. Right. And does your audience follow you from book to book because they know the quality of what they're going to get, or are there challenges there?
A little bit of both.
So some people are there for that specific book because they maybe know someone that has art in it.
Got it.
Or something like that, right?
Got it.
So some people won't cross over, but there's also a percentage of people that came for one book because they knew someone in it, and then they liked it so much as a collection that the next book they back too.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, just as much – I'd say it's like – it almost levels out the people that don't cross over versus the people that do.
Sure.
And we're also growing our audience in various ways through our newsletters and giveaways and at conventions and other Kickstarters that we've done. And, you know, like, again, some people are just waiting for the next Tracy Queen to come out and are not going to back anything else of ours. And that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I do think that they're like our really core audience are mostly people who came into the fold for one of our projects, whether it's an anthology or, you know, a Tracy Queen or a Pack or a Mr. Guy or a Children of Gaia. And then, I don't know, kind of saw... like continued to hang out with us while they were introduced to the different things that we do. And the people who really stick around and show up for almost every project, I think really have like, not to toot our own horn, but like they've gotten to know us.
Yeah. We're super like, you know, we make ourselves available. We're very personal in our newsletters. We're very personal, even in the introductions and forwards and in our, you know, letters in our campaigns, like we're Lindsay in jail, you know, like, yeah. You know us. If you've backed two of our campaigns, you know us, we're your friend, you know, like we're the person who you expect to hear from and you appreciate what we have to say. Right. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
we're people. We're not trying to look like a big corporate entity. We're humans being humans with you, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Sure.
And we get all philosophical with our stuff. So if you like that, you know.
And I'll say we have some folks that like backed early on, like our first or second Kickstarter, that have literally come back for every single Kickstarter we've done. For and they are just like, we've got some hero level, you know, audience members who literally are here for everything we do because they just know that if we're doing it, it's going to have our sensibilities and they like our sensibilities. Right. You know, we wear our hearts on our sleeve. We care about the world we live in. We care about the people we share the world with. And some folks see that in our work and are just here for it all day. Anything we do, they'll back it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow.
But that being said, it does present challenges. You know, obviously, I think Tracy Queen is probably the most stark example of something that deviates, you know, from sort of the norm generally, and also from our norm because of the subject matter. Mm. And, you know, like all of my high-minded talk about how, you know, sexuality can be wholesome aside, you know, plenty of people are just not comfortable with that type of material, and that is fine. Like, I'm not trying to make anyone feel the way that I do about these things. However, it's interesting that Tracy Queen is to date our most successful project.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think that sort of generally speaking, there is less adult material available in comic format because it is a taboo subject and not everybody is willing to do that. So for people who are fans of that type of material, there's less out there to choose from. And I think that that tends to make those projects very successful.
That's so interesting that you say that, though, because one of the jokes that I keep seeing, like making with, you know, friends on Kickstarter is just that there is so much like not safe for work, like I'm like, wow. And so much of it is like being funded like crazy, you know? Yeah. So like the challenge for you as publishers, that's kind of like my question. And I'm sorry if I'm getting hung up on Tracy Queen, because it's just my first exposure to both of you, you know? But I'm just saying, like, is it challenging for you to be like, let's do something that's not that? Whereas, you know, you just saying that Tracy Queen was probably your most successful, like, how do you, cause I mean, I know people who are like, all right, that's it. We're just going to start putting, you know, free the nipple on everything. You know what I mean? Like that's what gets funded on Kickstarter. So, yeah. I mean, you know, like, is there a temptation to do that? Does it matter? Like, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, so I think, first of all, it's important to note that even Tracy Queen had its difficulties because while Tracy is an adult performer, the first two issues of Tracy Queen are pretty tame. I mean, they're not really – it's not an erotic comic.
Okay.
It's a comic about a character who has an erotic profession.
Yeah.
So that right there is a huge challenge.
Okay.
Yeah. That's actually – basically the reason that we started Oneshi Press is when I was writing Tracy Queen and then JL and I teamed up because he wanted to do the art. We made like a sample. It was like, you know, the first 16 pages or something. We got it printed and we sent it out to a ton of publishers, like every publisher that we could find basically that did comics or graphic novels. We sent a copy of this to. And we actually got a lot of really positive feedback. Like we had editors writing to us and saying like, this is really good, but I can't touch it with a 10-foot pole because it didn't fall neatly into the erotic comics category because of what JL just said. And it also clearly was not a non-erotic comic. So it kind of like slipped through the cracks.
Yeah.
And at that point, I had been working in publishing in a variety of ways for well over a decade, and JL was working for Neil Adams for his private studio. So, like, we had a lot of experience of publishing things, including comics, and we thought, well, let's just do it ourselves. Mm. So that's really where Oneshi Press started. But the big thing is that, like I said before, JL and I both grew up as creative people. And I think, you know, we have different ways of coming at it, but we're both at heart storytellers. We both knew from the moment we teamed up creatively that we each have a lot of different stories that we want to tell. And neither of us would be fulfilled if we just, you know, if Tracy Queen was successful and then we were like, okay, everything is erotic comics from now on because that's what works, we would both be
dissatisfied. Yeah. We wouldn't be able to do it. I mean, eventually, and I know a lot of people, we know a lot of creators who are like, well, this is the business. If that's what's selling, that's what I got to do.
Yeah.
They all burn out.
Okay.
You know, it lasts a year or two, maybe five, but like you see the joy leave them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, well, what's the point? That's not success. That's failure to me. If you burn out because you're not doing what you feel you need to be doing, if you're not doing what needs to be done, if you're not saying what needs to be said and sharing what needs to be shared, if you're not making what you love, if you're not putting your love into the world, you are taking the most special thing in your life, creation, and just choking it. You're cutting it off. Mm-hmm. You know, like, why? What's the point? It's not success if you're failing to succeed. You know, like...
Yeah, so we have a lot of different stories that we are trying to tell, and yeah, there is difficulty in trying to, you know, bring an audience who started being excited about one thing and trying to tell them that they will really like this other thing.
Sure.
Because not everybody will.
Yeah.
But yeah. It is just fundamentally deeply important to us that we give it a shot, try these different stories. And yeah, we do have some that are less successful than others, but it's still important to us that those stories get told. So we try to do it all. And it's not always easy, but it's more important to us that the stories get told than that we, you know, are financially successful on every single one.
Okay. No, I mean, it's admirable to me, like, especially when people, because I mean, I know that, like, honestly, sometimes it's maddening to me where I'm like, this is getting like $50,000. Like, I'm like, oh my God, like literally. And I'm not disparaging. I'm not a prude. I'm not, you know, like I supported Tracy, you know, I'm just like, that's not the thing, but I'm like, people, porn is free. I want everyone to succeed, right? But at the same time, there is definitely a sort of like, you know, there's gold in them our hills, you know, sort of mentality that's happening on Kickstarter. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, but there's these other projects that are better or just as good. And so for me, it's admirable that you're just like, okay, I need to follow my muse and just do the things that I want to do. And, you know, repercussions be damned, but like, okay, this is what we're going to do. Right. I mean, yeah. I think that that's admirable and I have to give you kudos for that.
So I'm really, really holding myself back from getting up on another soapbox.
All right. We'll kick the soapbox out from under you. I'll ask a different question.
Okay.
To wrap up everything. Right. I'm kicking the soapbox out from under you.
I got you. I'll catch you.
But no, so I mean, this brings me to just another thing. And, you know, we're getting close to an hour, so I don't want to keep you too long. But you're talking about like pursuing your own artistic desires and things like that. How does that work with anthologies? Like, you know what I'm saying? Instead of like doing your own story and doing your own book, you seem to be gathering other people under sort of like an umbrella and sort of fostering their work and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me about the balance that needs to be struck as far as, you know, you feeling fulfilled, you know, making your own thing and then also pulling a thing together? There's a difference there, right? Or
there's actually a couple of points there that I would love to jump on. One is, you know, I've always thought like, be the person you wish you had. You know, no one scooped us up in the early days and was like, oh, I'll publish what you're doing. I'll put your stuff out, like, I'll be your foot in the door.
Yeah.
Like, we really wished that we had that. And so we're trying to do that for people that we see as being in that situation that we were in, you know, 10 years ago, right? So there's a little bit of that. It's like, by being that for other people, we are fulfilling the part of us that wish we had that, you know? And I would love to see more people think that way about the world that we share, you know, like do the thing you wish someone did for you. Don't just sit there being bitter that no one did it for you, you know, like,
yeah,
do it for someone else. That's your opportunity to fulfill it vicariously, you know, and that's how compassion works. Right.
Yeah.
But also we do include our own stories in there, and sometimes Like, for example, you know, the story that Lindsay was talking about that I wrote that's in this anthology, Betty May and Susie June, I had Fellhound illustrate it. And it's freaking awesome to see someone else illustrate my work, you know, as an illustrator. That's really fulfilling for me. And we worked on the intro, which someone else illustrated, and that was great. And we also worked on that Pack Tracy Queen crossover comic, which someone else illustrated, and that's amazing. You know, so we're also getting to see our stories worked on by other people in the anthology. And then there's a bunch of people who have become part of our community that we work with regularly because they submitted to one of our anthologies somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
So we're growing our family as well. You know, I mean, this is very, very close to our hearts. It's a labor of love. And if we can get it to fund itself so that it can exist in the world, cool. This is not our bread and butter. You know, like, the anthologies are a lot of work. We share everything past goal with our contributors. So even our profits are being shared. It's a co-op. We're doing it because we think it needs to be done, you know, not because this is our ticket to retirement. You know what I mean?
Sure,
it certainly
sure.
isn't, at least not at this point. But it's important and we believe in it. And so it is fulfilling.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, we're not bringing home the big bucks on our anthologies, but we are, I don't know, it's like, it's kind of providing a service. Like, one of the coolest things about anthologies is that everybody whose work appears in an anthology gets to share their audience with everyone else in the anthology. And, you know, some people that come onto our anthologies really don't have much of an audience yet. And some of them have very large audiences. So it's, we're sort of creating a little ecosystem within each anthology where creators get to know each other's work and then, you know, have access to one another for maybe their next project. They want to hire the illustrator that they saw work on this other comic in the anthology. Or, you know, maybe they just grow their audience because they had a really good comic that a whole bunch of people who never would have seen it otherwise are now going to see. And that, it feels really good to be able to do that for people.
That's great.
And, you know, I also know a lot of people that are like, hey, I've been published in this anthology, that anthology, and that's on their CV when they go to be like, when they're applying for a job as a illustrator or, you know, an inker or penciler or whatever, colorist, like, that's also experience for them. And other people are like, hey, I don't necessarily want to hire someone that doesn't have the experience because, yeah, you might be good, but you don't know if you can meet a deadline or not unless you've met a few deadlines. You know what I mean? So, like, it's giving people experience, too. But then, like I said, every now and then you get someone like Fellhound doesn't need the experience. She read my script and was like, she was like, oh, I don't know if I really have time. And then she read the script and she was like, okay, I have time for this. Like, this is an important story, you know, like, and I was like, oh, you just made my whole freaking year with that statement, you know, like,
of course.
And that was awesome, you know? But there's a lot of people in here who aren't noobs. They're just, they also see the value in this endeavor, you know?
Yeah.
And they're here for it all day. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I mean, again, it's on Kickstarter right now. It's called Cohorts, an anthology of short comics about team ups. Go to Kickstarter and just search the word cohorts, I would imagine, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. We also, we have a pretty link that we use. So it's, check this out. It's Kickstarter.OneshiPress.com.
Nice.
That will always bring you to whatever we're either
spell
our
Oneshi,
last project
spell Oneshi.
Or our next project.
Oh, Oneshi is O N as in Nancy, E S as in snake, H I.
Nice.
Oneshi.
Nice. Yeah, and there'll be links on my website, Part Time Family.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And where can people find you online? Are you still on the Twix? This is the thing that I'm always like hounding people. Are you still on the Twix?
It.
Are you on the Instagram? Like, what are we, what, how are we shucking our, you know,
our wares?
We are legion. No.
Omnipresent.
We're Oneshi Press on Facebook, on the Twix, on Instagram. And we also have a Blue Sky account, which
nice.
We are you know, experimenting with. We've actually found that Blue Sky has a really robust creative community going on.
Sure.
So we're enjoying ourselves over there. I think that we technically still have a Tumblr, but we don't actively post a Tumblr anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
And we are online at oneshipress.com. You can kind of find everything there.
Also, we have a Discord community that is burgeoning, and that is oneshipress.com/discord.
Yeah.
We'll bring you right into our Discord where you read the rules, you agree to them, and poop your...
Poop.
Your entire community.
Poop comes out the other end, J.O. Yeah.
And poop, you're out the other end.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great. Well,
community. There's a lot of folks on there, a lot of channels, a lot of conversations. It's a really good group.
That's awesome. Terrific. Terrific. Well, again, go to Kickstarter. Oh, I'm sorry. What was that?
I said you could fix that in post, right?
No, yeah, no, we're going to keep that poop in. We're keeping that poop in. That's the good stuff. That's the good stuff right there. Well, again, cohorts on Kickstarter.com. JL Draco, Lindsay G, or JLG. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate you coming back. It's always great to be remembered.
Yeah, thank you so much.
It was a pleasure talking to you.
This is
You're
great
awesome.
Conversation.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, yes, I try. Thank you so much. Thank you for your kindness and thank you for your time. And I'm going to go contribute to cohorts right now, as soon as we get off the line. And again, my name is Christian Horn. This has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We are still on Facebook. We are still on Instagram. We are no longer on the hellscape that is Twix. I should mention that I will be at LA Comic Con the first weekend of December. My booth is J33. I will have my own little comic, Periwinkle Puss, there, as well as prints and art and all that fun stuff. But in the meantime, go to Kickstarter, support cohorts, and thank you for listening. We will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
Fanboy.com.